there's moonbeams in your elbows, and there's rivers in your head. And I wanna see you forever, babe, forever. Don't take me back in time now, but there's nothing for me there.
Welcome to On the Wink podcast presented by Purina Pro Plan. All right, I've got some absolutely terrific news coming out of Washington, D.C. Yeah, you heard me correctly. Good news coming out of D.C. It's the Conservation Reserve Program. CRP is now open. You probably have heard our commercials, seen a press release, seen social media posts. The Conservation Reserve Program is open right now as you're listening to this podcast through June 6th. And that means that we have opportunity to add acres of habitat back into the ground for pheasants, for quail, for lessers, graters, sharpies, monarchs, whitetails, you and me as well, because CRP is also the foundation upon which many walk-in programs are built. In fact, there are almost 2 million acres of opportunity in this current CRP signup. And joining me to break down the Conservation Reserve Program and this big news for habitat in our mission is our very own CRP savant, the director of government affairs in the biggest Baltimore Orioles baseball room within the Habitat organization. He's making his podcasting debut, and he is wearing an Aberdeen Pheasants baseball uniform. Shout out to Casey Wiesmantle at the Aberdeen Convention and Visitors Bureau, who sent that jersey to me and is now on the shoulders of Andrew Schmidt. As I mentioned, Andrew is the Director of Government Affairs for Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and he is a terrific guy and a CRP savant, but most importantly, he's an Orioles fan. Thanks for joining, Andrew.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me. I don't know what makes me more nervous, the CRP savant tag or the Orioles Rube tag, but we're gonna proudly be both. I can wear those with honor.
I don't know that you can wear the Orioles.
It's tough.
Because let's break the ice. The Orioles suck right now. Why do the Orioles suck?
It's a tough scene. There are reasons.
They're supposed to be good.
There are reasons that we can get into if we want this to be a very long podcast. I can talk at length about two things. One is CRP and one is the Orioles front office.
Well, we won't dive deep in the Orioles, but for folks that maybe don't understand the connection between the Aberdeen Pheasants, yes, and the Baltimore Orioles, explain that linkage for folks.
Sure. Well, in the Aberdeen Pheasants were a minor league team throughout some of the mid-20th century, and they were for a period of time a minor league affiliate of the Orioles, and they won the championship of the Northern League. Probably it's the Northern League when they had Jim Palmer. Cal Ripken Sr. was the manager. 1964 so this is where the Orioles aren't doing great. So I'm going to remember their single A team in the 60s as a source of pride today.
And how old are you, just for reference?
I am 34 years old. So
you were not alive in the 60s.
I was not. I was just barely missed it.
Barely. And also, for clarity, Aberdeen that we're talking about is Aberdeen, South Dakota.
Correct. Nowadays, the Aberdeen Ironbirds from Aberdeen, Maryland, are the same, or are the minor league affiliate at the same level for the Orioles.
Okay.
And that
the
is where
Ironbirds?
Ironbirds. So
yeah,
Cal Ripken is from
Iron Man.
Yep. Mm. So he is now part of the ownership group of the Orioles, and he has a whole complex in Aberdeen, Maryland. But it's just, I don't know exactly if it was, I mean, just might have been happenstance, just like it is that Aberdeen Pheasants was a team and now I'm with Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. It's just all how it comes together.
It's serendipitous.
Yes.
Very cool. Let's start. You mentioned you're in your 30s. Give listeners an overview of, you know, where you grew up, schooling, cut your teeth on your career, and you know, how long you've been with the organization. Kind of give the Andrew Schmidt biography.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So I've been with PF&QF for about 3.5 years now. Feels like feels a lot longer because I've known the organization and been working with folks from PF&QF since really I got out of college. So I grew up in Northern Virginia in the DC area. I know people hold that against me, but you know,
it's your dad's fault, right?
Deal with it. Yeah, it's also my dad's fault that I was born in Alaska. So I moved to Virginia. We moved to Northern Virginia when I was really young. But my dad worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and he was in the migratory bird program, and ultimately worked in headquarters leading the mig bird program. So I had, even though I grew up in Northern Virginia, just outside the Beltway, which I feel like is very important to point out. It's a very distinct difference. It's not at all, but I like, again, leaning on it. So I had the good fortune of hunting with him, growing up being able to hunt with him all over the country, because he would know the people who know the spots, right? So so being able to take advantage of that and get outdoors with him growing up was really special. And that kind of led me through when I went to college. I went to a somewhat smaller school in Southeast Virginia called Christopher Newport University, where I studied political science. I tried like one biology class, could not. I mean, like I passed it. I mean, go me. But I have never had. I've never had the same mind for the hard sciences that my dad did. But I knew I wanted to work somewhere in. I knew it'd be great to work somewhere in kind of the conservation or wildlife field. So I always had it set on my mindset on coming back to the DC kind of scene. Thought I wanted to work in Congress, thought I wanted to be a speechwriter, I wanted to be Sam Seaborn from the West Wing and all this stuff, and thought I wanted to go to law school for like a day, and then I Googled law school and decided not to. My first job out of college was working for a former chief of the Natural Resources Conservation Service. So Bruce Knight was my first boss, and I got like Farm Bill 101, 102, 201 grad level, like just drinking from a fire hose with him, creating binder after binder and doing research and analysis for him. And then from then on out, just kind of found a footing in the wildlife conservation community. I worked for the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies and Ducks Unlimited, working both in both cases on Farm Bill and agriculture policy. And then eventually found my way to PF&QF. But like I said, it's been different business cards, but it's felt like a really similar job throughout the career working on Farm Bill policy.
How long did you work at Ducks Unlimited?
I guess a little over 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned, you know, you took a biology class and passed. Go me. That was very good. And I think about... Don't take this the wrong way. You're the wonkiest person that we've probably ever employed.
I don't know who's listening to this.
Yeah. When I say CRP savant, Dave Nomsen and Jim Inglis are very close too, right? But you have like a photographic memory, or at least a comes off as a photographic memory when you read, interpret, and then can recite back like Farm Bill legislation or legislation that's proposed. And do you have a photographic memory?
I don't. I mean, I don't think I do. I will say, and I learned a lot of what I know about CRP, cutting my teeth kind of with Jim and Dave and others in the community bringing me up to speed on it, right? Like I've been drinking from that fire hose since day one. But I don't know if I have a photograph memory or if my phone just has larger storage and I just save all the documents on it. The trick is always making sure people think you're recalling stuff right away, but it's like, I got it right here. I know where to find it. I knew this from whenever I would want to sink my teeth into something and really dig into a topic, I would just go all in. We mentioned the Orioles, like when I was growing up, like I could name the whole lineup for the team. I could list off like stat, like I was, you know, first or second grade and I know who the backup third baseman was and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes to the detriment of other things I should be remembering. I just find a niche and sit in it and emphasize that as much as I can. So for me with the Farm Bill, like I love knowing how things work. I'm an engineer. It's almost like my mind wanted to be an engineer, but I can't do math. So I just kind of, you know, with legislative text or like Farm Bill stuff, I just really enjoy digging into it. When you find something that's a niche, you just kind of like to hammer away at it, I guess.
I guess the major point that I want our listeners to take away, you know, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever audience and bird hunters, they should feel tremendous confidence in the fact that, you know, I consider you a savant or a wonk in the most positive way. Like, I think we'd be hard-pressed outside of, you know, whoever authors a piece of legislation, we'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that reads, retains, and can interpret Farm Bill and conservation legislation better, quicker, more astutely than Andrew Schmidt, and he's on our team. He's our, I don't know what position I'd put you in, second baseman?
I played first base.
Okay, so we'll put you at first base. Perfect. You know, it is super, super talented and knowledgeable, and which is why I've tapped him to share the information about the new CRP signup. So we'll transition to the big CRP news. Let me give one more shout out to Purina Pro Plan, national partner, national dog food sponsor of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, and presenting partner of On the Wing podcast. All of my pups eat Purina Pro Plan, not just because Purina supports the wildlife habitat conservation mission of our organization, which is obviously important to me, critically important to me. But the most important piece is that Purina Pro Plan has a team of the world's best scientists and nutritionists behind their dog food. Purina Pro Plan was made for the working bird dog, and you can learn more at ProPlansport.com. Purina Pro Plan, nutrition that performs. All right. I mentioned at the onset during our introduction that we've got big news about CRP. We don't have a new farm bill yet, which we'll touch on, but we do have almost 2 million acres of opportunity. Andrew, tell us what USDA has announced and what's going on right now.
So, yeah, on May 12th, the Farm Service Agency at the Department of Agriculture announced that they would be reopening signups for general and continuous CRP through June 6th. So this is huge news for farmers, hunters, habitat lovers. It's the first time that CRP enrollment has been open since the end of last September in 2024, which is when the Farm Bill expired. And even though the Farm Bill was extended in December, between the transition to the new administration and a number of other issues, it's just taken several months to get it up and running again. So we're really excited to see this happening now. It's a condensed time frame to get enrollment in. Usually we would love to see this open up in January or February, but again, really, really excited that we have a CRP signup going.
So because the Farm Bill timed out, as you mentioned, that's why continuous hasn't been open, right? Because obviously the word continuous would lead a person to believe that it's continuously open. But because the Farm Bill timed out at the end of September, which the federal government is on a budget year that ends September 30th. That's why it's been shut down. Mm-hmm. And now, as of May 12th, that's open. And then folks have probably heard the distinction between continuous and the general before. The general isn't open all the time. The general is open only when USDA says it's open, and they just said it's open. So that allows landowners to kind of a short window of opportunity to make an offer, right? So explain a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so at a high level, there's a couple different sign up types within CRP, and the two that are the most probably the most well known and the longest standing. So there's the general sign up and the continuous sign up. So under the general sign up, that was the first, you know, the first one out the gate in 1985 and has continued to go. So there's a competitive process. So the general sign-up is a competitive sign-up where focusing on highly erodible and marginal lands. So producers, landowners, farmers will submit an offer. Then those offers are all ranked together according to this, what they call the Environmental Benefits Index. So they're ranked according to their environmental benefits, taking into account cost, and then at the end of that, USDA takes them all together and says what we're going to accept. In the continuous sign-up, again, like the name should indicate, it's continually going, first-come, first-serve basis. It's weird this year because of the Farm Bill expiration and everything, but mm-hmm. The idea of the continuous sign-up is that eligible land can be enrolled at any time. So it targets high-priority conservation practices like wetlands, buffers, filter strips, high value wildlife habitat. So as long as it's eligible, it gets in, as long as it's eligible and there's space under the cap. This year it's kind of weird again because we've waited until May to get it up and running. So the timeframes are kind of going to be similar, but if you are enrolling in continuous CRP, you are accepted when you offer between now and June 6th. And then starting October 1st, you're going to be enrolled and receiving an annual rental payment. Under general, you can offer now, and then later in the summer, you'll find out how you rank and if you're accepted.
Let me throw one more acronym mm-hmm. into the mix, and that is CREP, also known as CREP, also known as the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, like continuous. That should have been or is normally open until acres. Like different states have different CREPs yep. based around watershed. So CREP is generally built around improving water quality in different watersheds or streams or rivers. It's got tremendous benefits from a wildlife habitat perspective, but there's generally a 100,000 acres in this watershed, and when it's fulfilled, it's done. There's a variety of them that are not maxed out yet, but because of the Farm Bill not being in play or the extension not happening, that's back in play now as part of this process as well, right?
Yeah, so CREP is kind of a sub-program of the sub-program. Mm-hmm. We got this like little nesting doll of CRP signups, and it's under continuous. And it what CREP is a partnership between state and tribal governments and USDA to address specific conservation challenges in a real targeted geographic area. So a lot of times it's a watershed. There's a whole host. The CREPs look different in every state because it depends on what that resource concern is, and then the state partner. Whether it's in Minnesota, it's Bowser, right? Mm-hmm. Or might be the DNR in a certain state. So it looks different everywhere it is. But the idea is bringing leveraged non-federal dollars to make that federal dollar go further, especially for water quality and wildlife practices.
And the reason I bring up CREP is, well, variety of reasons. It's one of the shining jewels mm-hmm. within CRP as itself, but also bird hunters likely know CREP really intimately. If you think about South Dakota,
yep.
You can think about the James River CREP, Big Sioux CREP, but James River was the original one, and it comes with public access.
Yes.
And so if you've hunted South Dakota public lands in the last decade, you have likely hunted crap, and you probably found birds there. If you've hunted Minnesota land in western Minnesota, private in most cases, you've probably hunted crap and found birds. In Michigan, in the Thumb, the Lake Erie crap, if you've found big numbers of pheasants in Michigan, it was crap related. So it's I bring it up because it's one of the absolute best components of CRP, and it brings so many benefits in addition to bird numbers.
And I'll add one more. You know, SAFE, the State Acres for Wildlife Enhancement, is another part of continuous. SAFE and CREP are both really good examples of how CRP, while a nationally implemented or administered program, is really effectively locally led. So you know, people in Farm Bill world love talking about locally led, because the folks at the ground level, at the state and local level, really know what needs to be done on the ground for producers and for rural communities. And SAFE and CREP are really tailored towards what they're trying to address, whether the water quality issue or the wildlife species of both economic and conservation concern. Like they're really, really good at tailoring those practices towards what's needed on the ground. And that's a huge success story.
So I'm running the risk of adding too many layers here, but I want to just briefly mention, so we've talked about CRP, general signups open, continuous, and within that, CREP is part of it. SAFE is also part of continuous. So two big chunks there, continuous and general. The third element of CRP is the grassland CRP.
Yep.
That's coming a little bit later, but it's worth making note, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely worth noting. If only just because of the sheer size of the sign up now. So when we think of general and continuous, we can think of them as like traditional or classic CRP. You know, these are acres of cropland that are enrolled due to being marginal, highly erodible, environmentally sensitive. And that sets these signups apart from grassland CRP, which is focused on conserving existing grasslands. So those important for whether it's livestock, wildlife, erosion control, what's eligible for that is more expanded beyond just something with a cropping history. So native grassland, native rangeland, expiring CRP, that was originally the target of the grassland signup. And there, you know, again, it's absolutely worth mentioning because there's almost 10 million acres of grassland CRP enrolled in the program now out of the 26 million acres total.
Wow.
And that, like you said, was only created in 2014 and really only took off after the 2018 Farm Bill.
And for folks I'm thinking about Oklahoma and southern Kansas, that is your silver bullet best solution for lesser prairie chickens too, isn't it?
It certainly plays a role. I mean, so does general CRP and continuous CRP in that part of the world. Where grassland is really kind of blown up is in the western parts of some of these plain states. You know, even western South Dakota, panhandle of Nebraska, northern New Mexico. It's really gone over really well with a lot of producers because it allows for one of the unique things about grassland CRP is that it allows for more continued managed hang grazing and CRP overall does, but the grassland sign up allows more of those uses of forage. There are certainly a lot of wildlife benefits within grassland CRP, but they're just differently targeted, and they're showing up different parts of the landscape than what I think folks would traditionally think of as kind of the core CRP areas.
Gotcha. All right. So I mentioned I was going to add two layers. The other layer that I want to talk about in relationship to general CRP, continuous CRP, and grassland CRP. I mentioned it briefly, VPA HIP. The walk-in component, because CRP is all about private land conservation, but the intersection of public opportunity is VPA HIP. Explain how that puzzle fits together.
Yeah, so VPA HIP is a federal program, but it's the only federal program at USDA or anywhere that focuses on opening up access on a voluntary basis to private lands. And so in a certain state, you might not know what VPA HIP is, but you know what WEHA is if you're in Kansas, right? Or you know what walk-in areas are in South Dakota or plots in North Dakota. I'm sorry if I didn't mention your state, but they all have great programs. The thing about VPA HIP is that it's a competitive grant program that then helps fund those state programs. And at a state wildlife agency, they might not have the budget or the fiscal ability to enroll huge amounts of cropland in what is effectively like a CRP type practice. But what they can do, and what they do through VPA HIP, is targeting existing CRP that's out there and adding a few bucks on top to open that land for public access and enroll in that program. That's huge. Mm-hmm. When we talk about stacking programs is another fun buzzword. So we can find out where the best habitat is. It's probably in something like CRP or SAFE, CREP. Mm-hmm. Find out where the best habitat is and just offer that landowner a little bit of a cherry on top to get them to enroll in this program. And it has huge, huge benefits economically, as far as like the money that goes back into local economies, license fees, license dollars, gun and ammunition sales. It's incredible to see kind of how they all work together to create more benefits for hunters and rural communities.
So as you put this, you know, all these ingredients together into a pot, you think about, I think about it when we had the high point of CRP. It was like 06, 07, mm-hmm. 08. Oh, by the way, that's when we had the high point of bird numbers during our generation, right? I mean, it's not weird. They're absolutely linked. What was it, like 36.2 million acres?
Yeah, more roughly. Like 36. Yeah, yeah. It was 36, 37, yeah.
In you know, South Dakota had a 60-year high harvest, mm-hmm. North Dakota 40-year high harvest, Minnesota 40-year high. Like, you just go around the belt, and all the states had almost record pheasant harvests when we had record CRP numbers. So you can see how linked CRP is to harvest. But I know there's an audience of folks out there like, CRP's private landowners, it doesn't help me at all. That's why I bring up VPA HIP. It's like, you know, CRP absolutely helps the public land hunter. A, birds don't care where the property lines are. A lot of birds that are created on private land end up, you know, after the harvest, pushed out into your favorite WMAs, GPAs, waterfall production areas, you name it. But there is also this major intersection, and we've all hunted, as you mentioned, you know, plots in North Dakota or OLAP in Oklahoma or open fields and waters in Nebraska, you know, pick your favorite acronym. The VPA HIP program stacks additional payments on the private landowner with a state agency and opens up private land, birds that are created on private land for the public lands bird hunter or the public access bird hunter. So, you know, we've touted the PATH program, mm-hmm. You know, our creation here that's, you know, now in South Dakota and Nebraska, and we might have a state or two to announce here in the coming months. But that's another example of stacking benefits for the private landowner to open it up birds for the public to go chase. So CRP is not the program that it was created in December 23rd, 1985. It's evolved in a variety of ways, and it's absolutely wonderful for anybody that chases anything, including, you know, just being a bird watcher. So we've talked a little bit about numbers back mm-hmm. in the heyday, you know, 36, 37 million acres. Where are we at today, and what's the opportunity in front of us with this sign up?
Yeah, so we are right at almost 26 million acres total enrolled in the program. And like we said earlier, there's a 27 million acre cap that's set by Congress in the Farm Bill. So with 26 million acres enrolled this coming October 1st, There will be another about 960,000 acres expiring. So the, like you said, the contracts run on the federal fiscal year. So September 30th, these acres will come out, their contract will end. So because all of these contracts that are going to be enrolled under this sign up will start October 1st, that all adds up to 1.8 million acres worth of room to enroll before the end of this fiscal year. And that, like, that creates a ton of opportunity for farmers and landowners who are interested in rolling some of their marginal land, you know, and get some more on-farm revenue and boost the rest of their operation going into to next season.
And hit some of the big states that we have. I mean, as you mentioned, there's a lot of expirations coming out. And as I looked at the list you provided in preparation, there's states I recognize as being in the heart of the pheasant range.
Yeah, so by far the two states that have the most expiring this coming fall are Kansas and Iowa. So Kansas has about 177,000 acres expiring, Iowa about a little over 150,000 acres. And then you get into a bunch close, about between 70,000 and 50,000 acres expiring with South and North Dakota, Nebraska, Texas, Minnesota. So, like, yeah, you pick where you want to hunt pheasants, and most likely one of those states has a bunch of acres coming out of the program. So that's where we have the most opportunity. There's opportunity everywhere, but that's where we need to make sure we're not losing acres in the program.
So that brings me to a question: what can the PF audience and QF audience of members and social media followers and our podcast listeners do to help? Because I think about, you know, the entire community knows that there's generally a CRP sign up every year, but there wasn't a whole lot of warning given, and the window is real short. So if somebody has a spring wedding or a high school graduation, like, you know, they maybe don't even know that this got announced, you know, 10 days ago, let alone that it closes in two more weeks. Right. So what can a person listening to this, or somebody that sees mention of it on social media, what should they do?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is just getting the word out. I mean, obviously we have, and you've mentioned this, you mentioned this at the top, we've got radio spots and marketing opportunity, advertising opportunities out there, but our farm bill biologist, our field staff is running around trying to make sure people know about this opportunity, trying to make sure that people who might have land expiring, you know, 10, 15 year contracts means that 10, 15 years ago, someone might have enrolled in this, and who knows if it's the same landowner. Who knows if they know it's coming out? So it's really just a matter of getting the word out and making sure people know about the opportunity. It's also, we're in a, not to get off topic, we're in a volatile time when it comes to the farm economy. Input costs are high, crop prices are low. There are a lot of producers that may be looking for some kind of financial certainty, income diversification, managing risk. So making sure people know that CRP is a good option for that. It is a part of the farm safety net. It provides a whole lot of both economic and ecological benefits on and off the farm. So just preaching the good word of CRP can go a long way in a time like this.
So you've touched on a couple times environmentally sensitive acres. We've touched on, you know, watersheds, probably as people thinking, well, buffers, right? And bingo, that's part of what CRP is. But if you can visually describe a piece of property or a couple different instances of different visualizations of what makes up a good CRP piece, like an eligible piece of property that a landowner should consider making an offer on.
Sure. I mean, it can look like a lot of different things, right? And that's one of the benefits of CRP is there's a lot of different types of practices. But it might be, you know, in certain parts of the country, it's going to be some of the hard to farm spots on a farm and on a field where you may be, and we know this from precision ag and some of the tools that our staff uses. They can tell you where the red spots are on your land, where you're losing yield, or where you're losing, losing money by farming it, by just putting inputs into it. And they can show you what you might be making if you enroll that part in CRP to then lift the rest of your operation. There's also opportunities for like wetland restoration or enrolling existing or you know, enrolling in the prairie pothole region and trying to find some duck nesting habitat and some opportunities to restore some wetlands. Or if you're along a stream, or if you have some opportunities for filter strips or buffers, there's a never ending list of opportunities for finding a home for CRP on your land. And that's kind of the goal with having, I mean, there's a whole lot of practices and it gets mind numbing at times to look at the practice list. But there's, if you're a producer, if you're a landowner, there is a very high chance that there's some land on your property that CRP can help lift the rest of your bottom line by enrolling it. A lot of times it's highly erodible land and marginal lands that simply are either hard to farm or financially not, you know, not helpful to farm.
Yeah. They're sucking money out of your operation. So it, like you, you know, adding a little additional color to this, thinking about there's that spot that is wet every single year, no matter what, and you get stuck there, and you, I think that's CRP potential. You said streams, rivers, creeks, wetlands, you know, protecting the water quality or different things that are along waterways, hillsides rather than terrace, right? Like plant it to grass, like pulling the tractor up the hill. If that feels awkward, it probably is. And you might qualify for, you know, and that's part of the highly erodible component of it. If you got a woodlot, right? And the farm field next to a woodlot, there's practices where you can plant grass to that woodlot because you're not going to pull off the same yield right next to that woodlot that you would if there wasn't, you know, sunshine on it constantly. So if there's things that are just, like you mentioned, environmentally sensitive, tough to farm, whatever that means to you on your property, go into your local USDA service center or go to pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org/CRP. And on either website, that'll take you to our Find a Biologist map. And we've got 350-ish biologists, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever expert biologists that work in partnership with the USDA. And if you're a landowner, or if you're a friend of a landowner, you know, get to, you know, get that person linked up to this website, pheasantsforever.org/CRP, quailforever.org/CRP. We've got a team of experts, one-stop shop biologists that can talk to you about what property on your farm. They can look at a satellite image of your property and look at, you know, this low spot, that might qualify for CRP or maybe a state-specific program like RIM in Minnesota or REAP in Iowa or, you know, whatever the acronym is in your particular state. There's local programs, there's state programs, there's federal programs like CRP. But those websites and our team of biologists, not to sound like an infomercial, but they are waiting to answer your questions and help make a difference for the birds. What have we missed? Anything on the CRP front before I go into a Washington, D.C. Farm Bill lightning round on you?
Well, I mean, I kind of alluded to this a couple of times through how we were, you know, as we were talking about CRP, especially when I've mentioned it as part of the farm safety net a couple of times. We had just this past week, we had our newest board member, Lynn Churchma, in town in D.C. to testify before the Senate Ag Committee. And Lynn is a former staffer for now Majority Leader John Thune from South Dakota. And he worked at FSA for many years and is a farmer rancher, still has a farm in South Dakota. And he, you know, one of the most compelling parts of his testimony was his experience with CRP and how it's helped the rest of his operation. And again, this is, you know, for years, I think CRP was considered this kind of whole landscape, the whole farm is going in CRP. And Lynn talked, spoke really eloquently about the importance of CRP to the rest of his operation and keeping it in production. So the whole idea of farm the rest, CRP the rest, he said it in so many words of talking about looking at a map off the combine and seeing where the least productive ground is, putting it into the into CRP, and then getting a CRP payment. And then he, you know, he was able to lower his crop insurance premiums. Mm-hmm. He was able to increase his yield on the rest of his acres. It's the idea is renting out your basement room to help pay for the mortgage. Mm-hmm. Like how do you not sell the whole house? How do you afford to stay here, but use what you want to use and not use what you don't want to use for crop production? And that's a really effective way to use CRP that I think people are starting to understand better and better every year as this program kind of moves into its next era. Like we have fewer acres available than we did in 2007, but it has a huge impact on the landscape, both for farmers and for wildlife.
Yeah, that's really well said. Yeah, Lynn did a phenomenal job, and it was wonderful to see, you know, the prominence that our organization through Lynn was able to play in the discussion about the evolution of CRP. Because the days where, you know, a lot of folks will call CRP the set aside program, mm-hmm. that's a misnomer in today's 2025 CRP. It's not a program where you put acres away and you forget about them. It's a program that does a lot of different things for an operation, whether that's creating habitat for wildlife, which obviously is no secret. That's our primary goal. There's a lot of landowners where that's their primary goal too, because a lot of farmers, a lot of ranchers love wildlife. But beyond that, it can be a safety net for haying and grazing in times mm-hmm. of drought, or, you know, all sorts of different wild weather impacts or wildfires. You know, it can be a beneficial program for healing soils, for protecting water quality. So the idea that CRP is a set-aside program is something that we need to reprogram people mm-hmm. to eliminate that phrase, because it's just not – that doesn't do it's not a good representation of what CRP means in today.
I similarly cringe or kind of get twitchy when people talk about CRP taking land out of production. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll often say taking land out of crop production, but taking land out of production implies that the land isn't producing anything anymore. And if you know, if the folks listening to this, you know, this fall, walk on some CRP or VPA hip ground, tell me that land isn't producing anything. You know, that it, whether it's producing water quality, water quantity, wildlife, soil health, like it's not sitting idle. CRP is not idle land. So, you know, it really is a matter of reframing and rebranding how everyone mm-hmm. thinks about it. And yeah, Lynn did a great job of that. He was like, it was like following around a rock star in Washington, D.C. It was incredible. And I, you know, we'd turn around, he'd be talking to somebody else. We're like, come on, man, we gotta go. We're late for the hearing. And he's like, I'm catching up with this person I knew from this person's staff. And it was amazing to see. And then, you know, the majority leader, John Thune, came into the committee hearing to introduce him. And, you know, I know folks don't spend a lot of their time, hopefully, watching committee hearings in D.C. In the Senate, but the majority leader does not typically go to committees. He serves on the committee, on the Ag Committee, but he typically has got some other stuff, especially right now, to do. So for him to stop in and give a really great introduction to Lynn, talk about hunting pheasants and shooting pheasants on his farm, there's a moment to show you how rare it is for the majority leader to come into a committee hearing. About 5 minutes after he spoke, he had to go to another meeting, I'm sure, but we had a couple CNN, like national CNN reporters, kind of poke their head into the Ag Committee hearing room, which it kind of looked like, did they know where this was? Did they have to find a map? they clearly got a tip that John Thune was in this room talking. So they're going to ask him a question about taxes as he leaves and kind of thing. And he was already gone, but you could see us like, I know you from TV. He's not here anymore. Sorry.
if folks want to see Lynn Churchma's testimony and, you know, John Thune, Senator Klobuchar, some of the questions, Senator Justice also had great comments about wildlife and CRP and hunting. You can look at the press release. It's listed under the stories tab on both of our websites. May the 13th was the press release. And at the bottom of the press release, there's also a link. If you want to watch the hearing, you can watch it in its entirety. It's all linked there.
If you look hard enough, you can find a real attractive redhead in the background with a great pheasant pin of that hearing.
I didn't honestly see you. You were on the screen a couple of times.
I'm always there, Bob. Yeah. I'm just always there.
Lurking.
Early on, but I was happy to be off screen for most of it. I have a bad CRP poker face when other people are talking about it.
Oh, that I did see it. You were sitting behind Ron, weren't you?
I was. Yeah.
So Aria Wiegard, Vice President of Government Affairs, and Ron Leathers, the Chief Conservation Officer, were immediately behind Lynn Churchma, and then you were behind. You were kind of.
I was thrilled for them to get the reserve spots. You sit here. Great, perfect. That's where I want to be.
All right, quick DC roundup. Where are we at on a new farm bill, Andrew?
Oh yeah, easy one.
Yeah, how'd you like that transition?
Yeah, I think it's at the top of my social media bios. Working in DC, even when DC isn't working, because I feel like that sums it up for this year. So. Yeah, for a new farm bill, we are still under a one-year extension under another one-year extension following last fall. So it expires at the end of September this year again. There have been a lot of other things that Congress is doing other than negotiating and passing a new farm bill. So there's this whole, I won't get into the wonkiness of what budget reconciliation means, but it means Congress is doing other things. Mm-hmm. There is some talk about rolling some parts of the farm bill into that process, but what we need for PF and QF and the conservation community, what the ag community needs is a full five-year farm bill, usually is a... you know, the bipartisan farm bill is something we all like to point to historically. It takes bipartisan support to move a farm bill through Congress. And as of now, they just have not been able to, I guess, focus the time needed on that. So we are hopeful as the year goes on that we can continue working with the ag committees and the House and the Senate to draft a farm bill. There was some work done on it last year. House Ag Committee passed a farm bill out of committee, but it didn't get to the floor. So we have a place to start from, but there's a lot of work yet to do. So we're hopeful, but again, Congress has been focused elsewhere for the last couple months.
So obviously, I can hear a bit of pessimism in
your voice. I'm trying, man. I'm trying. Yeah.
Well, okay. So let me offer two bits that could lead to optimism, and that's the creation of what hasn't yet been introduced, I don't believe, the CRP Improvement Act, and the other piece that has been introduced, the VPA HIP Improvement Act. And the reason I say that brings me optimism is that at least there are elements in Congress and folks in Congress that are working on the farm bill through other means to advance the ball down the field. So once we get to a moment in time where we can have a full five-year farm bill discussion, we're not starting from scratch. We've got a couple of major improvements coming to the language itself. So tell us about the CRP Improvement Act.
Yeah.
Concept.
So the CRP Improvement Act, which, like you said, has not been introduced in this Congress, but has been introduced in the past two Congresses. So each Congress is 2 years, and anytime you get to the end of that end of that session, you need to, you know, everything kind of gets wiped clean. So in 2023 and 2021, this bill was introduced that PF and QF supports, wholeheartedly endorses. It's led by, again, Majority Leader Thune and ranking member on the Ag Committee, Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota. the CRP Improvement Act, what it does is it makes a number of what might seem like small tweaks to the program and kind of nuance, like kind of really in the weeds policy stuff, but could have a huge impact on the future of the program. And the things I'll point out that it does is it raises the payment limitation for how much a single producer or landowner can get from the program in a year from $50,000 to $125,000. So in 1985, so that $50,000 number has not changed since 1985 when the CRP was created. Wow. Every other payment limitation seems to have gotten increased according to adjusting for inflation and land values, but CRP is not. So, if you want to enroll more land in CRP in a lot of places in the country, you might be ready to go with more marginal lands, more, high value wildlife practices that you want to put on your ground. But you can't get any more money from the rental payments for it because you're capped out. So really excited about the prospect of getting that increased. It would also restore some cost share authority for management. So one of the things about CRP is that midway into a contract, you're supposed to put some management activities on your land. So that could be interseeding or light disking or prescribed burning is usually the one that we love to emphasize and incentivize them more than most. So to create that wildlife, to sustain those wildlife benefits throughout the life of the contract. So we want to make sure that there's cost share for producers and landowners to do that. And then finally, it would also incentivize some grazing cost share for like fencing and water infrastructure to then make sure producers are incentivized to keep that land in grass following the contract. And they would permanently establish that safe practice, State Acres of Wildlife Enhancement, as part of the continuous signup, which would then ensures that safe has the right incentives and cost share available for producers to encourage enrollment in high priority practices. So really exciting. We're hoping to get it reintroduced soon. We're working with the co-sponsors from the last Congress and trying to work with our partners and stakeholders in the community. It, like you said, it hasn't been introduced, but we're continuing to work towards it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it obviously has great benefit for the landowner.
Yep.
If we can get those improvements, and great benefit for the landowner means there's more demand for CRP, more successful, more acres enrolled, and benefiting pheasants, quail, prairie grouse, pollinators, you name it. Last thing to touch on, VPA HIP Improvement Act. Hit on that one real quick.
Yeah, so VPA HIP in each farm bill usually gets a set amount of money that then is available for the life of the five-year farm bill. So in the last farm bill, it received $50 million. The incredible thing about VPA HIP is that it has pretty amazing economic return or economic benefits for local communities. So in 2021, the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies published a economic analysis of the program that showed like an 8-to-1 ROI on every federal dollar. $8 goes back into the community, into the economy through like gas or hunting equipment purchases, hotels, bars, everything. So in this farm bill, we're working with our partners in the wildlife community to get VPA HIP increased funding. So the VPA Improvement Act, which is co-sponsored by Senators Bennett, from a Democrat from Colorado, and then Senator Daines, a Republican from Montana, and Senator Marshall, a Republican from Kansas, they reintroduced this bill that would increase VPA funding to $150 million. And that's just in the Senate. In the House, there's also a companion bill with Dusty Johnson from South Dakota and Debbie Dingell from Michigan. So we have like broad bipartisan support. I mentioned all the names because I want to show to everyone how amazing it is that we have bipartisan support from all parts of the country for these amazing programs, both CRP and VPA.
Yeah. Yeah, those should be very encouraging components for folks that are pulling for a farm bill, because, both, like you mentioned, both with Thune and Klobuchar and both in the House and Senate versions of VPA HIP, voluntary public access dash Habitat Incentives Program. That's what VPAF means. Has broad Republican and Democrat support, which is somewhat uncommon in 2025. But it demonstrates that I think that there's hope on the horizon for the Farm Bill. At least, let's we have to hope, but we also have to act.
I'll just also say, you know, you mentioned before, like the build up to the Farm Bill is usually a slow burn, and it just happens. And I think it's really showing this forward progress through these marker bill introductions and through these hearings like we were a part of last week. There's a lot of reason to be optimistic about how well positioned we are in the conservation community when things do move forward on a farm bill. So the thing we have to do is keep moving forward and working towards that bipartisan support for our issues so that when things are ready to go, we are right there at the table. We are well positioned when things do get moving.
And not only do we have a vested interest with our habitat mission and wildlife focus and, the walk-in programs, but the dairy industry, the corn growers, Farm Bureau, eggs, you name it. Everybody wants a farm bill, right? Yep. I mean, and a lot of folks will figure what's coming next is, hey, contact your elected official and let them know you want a farm bill. That's somewhat obvious at this point. Where my head is at, though, is there's a lot of people that have heard that ad nauseum and like, it doesn't matter, Bob. And I remember sitting in a goose blind once next to Colin Peterson, former House Chair of the Ag Committee out of Minnesota, and I had the opportunity to go goose hunting with him. And I don't know how we got on this, but like, how often do you hear from people on, was my question. He's like, not very often. Like, okay, what's relevant then? What moves the needle? Like, as little as 10. Really? Like, it's like, yeah, if 10 people pick up the phone or drop me an email, write me a letter on a particular topic, that gets my attention. It's like, 10? He's like, yeah, that people are just, they don't do it. Has that changed over time, or do you think 10 people listening to this can have an impact?
You know, it's changed. I think 10 people can have an impact. Absolutely. Has it changed? Probably a little bit. I mean, cable news and social media has
email blasts.
They've changed. I think things have changed as far as what elected officials respond to, in terms of, some of the high profile, elected officials, but they respond to their constituents and they listen to their constituents, and their staff listen to their constituents. And that's who you really, I mean, no disrespect to the elected officials listening to our distinguished podcast, but like the staff are like, they write these bills. They respond to the constituents just as much. And, there aren't many places where I can draw comparisons between, the part of my life where I lead music, and play music at my church, and when I lobby on behalf of PF&QF. But one of the places I can draw a comparison is that people speak up about the things they don't like, and they don't speak up about the things they do like. And people will call Congress and say, I'm mad about this. It could be a conservation program. It could be taxes. It could be healthcare. What you get fewer calls on and what you get fewer emails at church about are the things you do like. The things that, to say, I love CRP. CRP has had these benefits for my land, these benefits for my, my recreation, my hunting and spending time outside. So call your elected officials and write them letters, emails, let them know what you appreciate, what you like, and what should continue. Because right now in Washington, D.C., a lot of things are just about what shouldn't continue. Make sure that they know what you do appreciate.
Right on. Well said. And I will remind you, here's some numbers coming up related to acres of CRP set to expire. Kansas. I know we got a lot of members, Quail Forever and Pheasants Forever in Kansas. 177,000 acres. And you, again, you can write them off, say, that's private land. You like Weehaw? Your favorite spot in Weehaw may very well be set to expire. So let somebody know. Iowa, 154,000 acres. South Dakota, 70-plus thousand acres. North Dakota, 60,000-plus. Nebraska, 60,000. You know, some big, big states in the Great Plains that a lot of people travel to go bird hunting, or maybe they live in those states, and your favorite spots are part of those acres that are set to expire. Let your elected official know. And again, if you have property and you're interested in making an offer to CRP, the general sign-up, or seeing what your options are for continuous or CREP or, heck, any other program, check out our Farm Bill Biologists. You can find them at pheasantsforever or quailforever.org/CRP. We got a whole team of biologists ready to talk to you about habitat and how you can get paid to do something good on your land for wildlife, for water, for soil, and for your bottom line. All right, Andrew, put a bow on this for me. Any closing thoughts that we missed? Or anything you want to underscore?
If the Twins can win 10 games in a row, then so can the Orioles.
Optimistic.
Yep. We're gonna do this. Go Birds of all kinds.
Bring that same optimism to a new farm bill.
That's a good point. I'll try that.
Thank you for doing this, Andrew.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks. One more time. Pheasantsforever.org, quailforever.org/CRP. You can talk to a farm bill biologist or find your local USDA service center. The window of opportunity is right now, but it closes June 6th for the general sign-up. And, you got time running out. So get in there and check out your options. I'm Bob St. Pierre reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening.